And welcome to episode 31 of the Star Trek Discovery podcast. I'm Brian.
And I'm Ruthie.
And we will be covering season 2, episode 6, The Sound of Thunder. Sound as opposed to sounds. I don't know why, but everything I saw up until the actual release of the episode said it was called The Sounds of Thunder. But it's only a singular sound. Anyway, but before we get started with that, we've got some feedback for last week and even beyond that, prior weeks. So let's open Hailing Frequency, shall we?
Yep.
Okay. So before we get started with that, I just want to acknowledge we got some novel size feedback. As you could say, some pretty long feedback. Unfortunately, it's too long for us to go into. We'd end up with a 4-hour podcast, I think. So,
and I think they both knew that.
Yes, I think they did too. But I do want to thank Brian, as opposed to this Brian, not this Brian, but Brian and Todd for their feedbacks, and we did definitely read them. In fact, there's some of it that I'm thinking maybe we could cover in the hiatus, you know, do an episode or two after the season's out. Because especially, well, both of them actually, but Brian in particular, I'll single out. There were a few things that I definitely want to talk about on the podcast. I just don't want to talk about it on the podcast now. It's more timeless stuff, like overall thoughts of the series and how it compares to previous shows and an episode to come. So, all right. So our first bit of feedback is actually a voicemail, first of two, from Jenny.
Hi, this is Jenny from Cincinnati, and I'm leaving a message for Star Trek Discovery. I was hoping somebody would make this point about bringing back Hugh Culber. From a TV writer's standpoint, tears are the least inciting bodily fluid to talk about. Paul Stamets is steeped in spores, and it's reasonable to assume that he and Hugh had an active and healthy relationship. So Hugh could have also been inoculated with the spores. Or at least he was exposed. And at the point where he transferred into the mycelial network, Paul himself was acting as a doorway. So take this for what you will. Love the podcast. Bye, guys.
Thanks, Jenny.
Well, that's an interesting thought.
Yeah. Definitely a different perspective I hadn't thought about. You know, I just finished an entire series of books that were all set in Cincinnati.
In Cincinnati, yes. And I passed through Cincinnati on the way to Tampa.
I have never been to Cincinnati.
Yeah, it's funny. That was actually the first time I had been in Cincinnati, even though I lived in Cleveland for, you know, almost a total of 15 years for 1 year and then 14 years a couple of years later. So, yeah. Anyway,
every time I hear the word Cincinnati, though, I always think WKRP in Cincinnati.
Very true. Yes.
Oh, man. I can't help it. It's just a, I don't know, autonomic response or something. Knee jerk, whatever you want to call it.
Yep.
Anyway, yeah, I appreciate your phrasing as far as Hugh and... what's his first name?
Paul
Stamets. I'm totally blanking on names and everything. And I agree that Stamets was basically acting as the doorway. And you are correct. Tears are probably the least offensive bodily fluid That could appear on the television screen. It's a very good point.
Yes. We have some more feedback regarding the tears as well. So, yep. Yeah. All right. Well, we have another voicemail, and this one is from Steve Brown.
All right.
Hello, Brian and Ruthie. This is Steve, and just a couple quick notes on these last few episodes. I know I haven't sent feedback for a while, so I was glad that I was able to watch those two episodes, episodes 4 and 5, kind of back to back. And so really like that whole thing of going into the mycelial network, even though there was a lot of issues with the whole, and I agree with everybody, there's a lot of issues with that whole universal translator thing going haywire. And so I'm glad they didn't spend a lot of time on it in that episode. The intelligence community on all shows just about has a motto that we do what we do so that you can do what you do. So I really like that. And I haven't heard anybody else mention the fact that Section 31, it seems to me like it's kind of like that same trope that we get in a lot of shows. And I'm not saying I don't like it. I love it, actually. Harkening back to like the Dirty Dozen, to where you have these characters who need redemption, and the way they find redemption is in this kind of black ops kind of secret mission organization. So I think that's what we have going on here with Tyler and Captain Giorgio, or Emperor Giorgio, is this is their opportunity to kind of redeem themselves. And even though, you know, Giorgio may have some sort of secret agenda, I really think that's what Section 31 is all about. And I'm looking forward to the show when it comes out. And I do think, I agreeing with Brian and everybody else who said that, I think the whole reason for bringing number one even into the show for that very brief appearance was just setting us up for an Enterprise show down the road. And I hope so, because it would be an interesting way for CBS All Access and for Star Trek to continue. Last thing before I shut up is, Burnham said that the angel guided Spock to rescue her on Vulcan when she was a child. Did I miss something somewhere, or is that a story yet to be told? Talk to you later.
Well, the last thing, and that was the actual thing that he thought that was specifically just for this past episode, that was mentioned in episode 3. So that was when Burnham was meeting with Amanda. So that was brought up.
Yeah. We don't really know what happened, though.
Yeah.
They just talked about it. They said whatever.
I have a feeling we're going to see that.
I think so, too.
Yeah.
But as of yet, we do not know what happened.
Yeah.
We also don't know what this horrible thing is that she did. So.
Yeah. And I have a feeling we'll know. You know, it's probably like, Mommy loves me more. Or something like that.
Yeah, I don't know. Well, I guess we'll find out. I really don't have any speculation. I don't.
Yeah.
I don't know.
All right. Now for some written feedback. First one is from John. And he says, it's been a very long time since an episode of Star Trek made me tear up, but leave it to Mary Wiseman at the end for the salty eyes. I had a few issues with this episode. How long it took to explain Culber being there and coming back while the ship is literally being destroyed. But I did like the new partnership between Disco and Section 31. 8 out of 10 tears that I gladly gave up.
Okay.
All right.
Doug says, just for clarification, you already had another Doug as someone who left feedback, so you can refer to me as the other Doug. Thank you, the other Doug.
Yes, thank you, the other Doug.
I will keep that in mind.
Although I have to admit, I don't remember who the other Doug was.
Or the other Doug. the first Doug. I don't either. That's okay. Every other Doug from now on will be Doug, and this Doug will be the other Doug.
All right. So next is from James. He says, hey, guys, just listened this morning. Brian, first off, thank you for the concern. My wife is very pregnant and due in April, but mommy and baby are healthy. He continues, he says, don't have much feedback on the episode because I really haven't been able to sit and give it my full attention. But from the first watch, it gets 8.75. That's Soldier for you. Get behind me.
That's Soldier.
Would have been higher, but no Jet Reno. Going forward, all Renos that don't have her in it. Sorry, I didn't say that right. Going for, I said all Renos.
I know.
Going forward, all episodes that don't have her in it will be deducted a point. Did I mention she's my favorite character? Well, you have now.
Yeah, me too. I like her.
Hashtag Ruthie's right again on the pronunciation of, how'd you say it?
Chang.
Chang. Mm-hmm. Mark Decote, this is no time to argue about time. We don't have the time. What was I saying? LOL. And if you don't get that one, you're about to. You had me rolling in your feedback on that point about Saru repeatedly bringing that up. My mind immediately went to the drunk Deanna Troi when you brought it up and how Saru and Troi will forever be intertwined. And that's, of course, from a scene in Star Trek First Contact. So as soon as I read that, I knew exactly what he was talking about.
Yeah.
One thing I did want to make mention of was this episode to me seemed very theatrical, but in a way that's totally different from, say, the Vulcanal Hello or Battle of the Binary Stars, which seemed more like an action movie with a Trek theme. This episode seemed like Trek made for the big screen. I don't know, just a feeling I got from the episode. Brian, if we do get a Nickelodeon animated series and you decide to podcast it, look no further for a co-host. Oh, he's volunteering. Look at that. I'd be totally down. My seven-year-old tends to be with me when I listen to you guys, and she really gets excited when she hears my name and feedback read on this show. It would probably really blow her mind if she heard me coming through the radio. LOL.
No doubt.
Well, that would be cool, and I'll keep that in mind, James. So, cool. Gotta clear up the schedule a little bit.
Yeah, no kidding. Gotta drop some dead weight. Walking Dead.
Yeah. Well, I am actually taking the week off of The Walking Dead this week.
Oh, so, cool.
Yes.
I'm not bitter about that show or anything. So.
No, not at all.
Not even a little bit.
And here's the thing, you know, we've been waiting. Sorry to do this for those of you that, you know, don't get into this show, but I will say this part, you know, Ruthie, you and I were waiting quite a long time for the Whisperers. Uh-huh. Well, here's the deal. They're not all that interesting. And, of course, somebody's probably saying,
what is this bizarre segue that's happening right now? Can we maybe stay on point?
Yes, please, Blaine. I don't want to talk anymore about that.
All right.
The Deanna Troi scene when she was drunk was hilarious.
It was.
That was one of my favorites. Honestly, that movie is one of my favorites. I love it.
Yeah.
I do like Insurrection a teeny bit more, but...
Oh, dear.
A little bit, yeah. Oh. I don't know. I just love Insurrection. I think it's probably my favorite. But First Contact is a very, very close second.
Yeah, Insurrection, I think, is, I'd say, underrated. I watched all of the Next Gen movies prior to, I think it was prior to the season. It was either the season starting up or us podcasting about the short treks. Uh-huh. But yeah, I watched all of them over a long weekend, and they all really stand up well.
Yeah.
Even Nemesis, which I podcasted about on another podcast that... Unfortunately, it's been taken off the air, so you can't listen to it. But
yeah, I really enjoyed Nemesis as well. It was very bittersweet for me, though.
Yeah, well, maybe it won't be so bittersweet coming soon. Maybe.
Maybe. We'll see.
On a, but on a show we will hopefully be podcasting about, you'd better be podcasting with me.
All right. I guess I have my marching orders.
we already talked about it. So, yes.
Yeah.
When the time comes.
All right.
Ruthie and I will be talking about Picard because we can't. We can't
have the show him.
Otherwise. We have to talk about it.
Because I love him.
Me too.
All right.
He's my guy. So.
Yep.
Always has been.
Yeah.
All right. We got one from Ken now.
Ken from Chicago says, belated rating, 9 of 10, hashtag space blankets for the shivering naked man who's balled up to preserve his body heat and personal dignity. From all the meanie pants just standing around laughing at him. BTW, welcome back, Ruthie. Once again, hashtag Ruthie's right. We didn't need a detailed explanation. A simple sentence from Pike removing the holocomms from Enterprise was enough.
Yep.
The hashtag sci-fi article I linked before said Pike was made fleet admiral so he could ban holocomms fleet-wide. Ha ha.
Hashtag rip them out.
Yeah.
That's what I would say. Okay. Well, I've got one incorrect. I only have one incorrect, but I could swear I had another incorrect, but I didn't write it down. I wonder if it'll come to me.
But I don't think this one is actually an incorrect.
Well, it's technically sort of an incorrect because I was saying I deferred to you, but I still was brought it up.
But so you were still wrong, you mean?
I just want to give myself an incorrect. That's what it comes right down to.
He really just wants to play the audio clip.
Yes.
Incorrect.
Okay, so Cornwell. Ruthie was right. Hashtag Ruthie's right. When she said that Cornwell did have a gold uniform on or gold trim or whatever you would call it. Now, in the one's angle that they showed Cornwell, it did look copper. And I went back and watched it earlier this week, and sure enough, it did look copper. But before it and after it, it was clearly gold. So, oh, well, I was wrong, but that's okay.
Yeah.
And you told me so.
Well, I was looking at the episode at the time. So.
Yep.
You know.
You did.
Yerp.
All right. So at this point, it is time to talk about season 2, episode 6, The Sound of Thunder. Written by co-producers Bo Young Kim and Erica Lippholt. And they are supposedly the ones that are creating the Section 31 series, which is kind of funny because you would have thought based on last episode that they would have written that one, but instead they wrote the Saru episode. But, and I'll get to it in a second, directed by Douglas, and I got it wrong during the short track, Douglas Arniokoski is, I believe, how you say his name.
That's how I would say it.
Both Bo Young Kim and Erica Lippholt wrote, and Douglas Arniokoski directed The Brightest Star, which
makes sense. Speaking of The Brightest Star.
Yes. So, yeah, they were the ones also doing The Brightest Star, which makes total sense because that was the Saru short track. So,
well, that was the one that tied directly into this one.
Yes, very much so. For people that thought that the short tracks really didn't matter, well, they got one that definitely did matter. In fact, it even showed clips from it.
Yep. So I would say definitely find that one and watch it.
Yes, it's a good one.
It's well
Ruthie
done.
Didn't like it as. Here's a question that I've got, and we'll get into it in a second. But do you appreciate that short trek more after this episode?
Yeah.
Yeah. So do I. It's funny. Okay, so the description from CBS.com. When a new signal appears over Saru's home planet, Burnham, Saru, and the crew embark on a perilous mission that puts Saru in danger and raises questions about the Red Angel's intentions. Hugh struggles to come to terms with this new reality. That was rated TVPG and released February 21st, 2019 in the US and Canada, and of course, February 22nd everywhere else. So, Ruthie, if you had to give a rating, what would you give The Sound of Thunder?
I would give this episode an arbitrary 9 out of 10.
Yes, she is very consistent, except for last episode, I think. All right, so I am going to give this one a 9.2. So that is the lowest rating that I've given any episode this season so far, slightly below Point of Light. But that is 9.2 delicious slices of galaxy pie. Yep.
That's
so funny. We have some listener ratings. So Ruthie, you want to get that started?
Okay. James from Facebook says, I give this episode 8.35. Armus was just a portly bowels. I know he wasn't, but the look is very reminiscent of the skin of evil.
It sure was.
I don't get that reference at all.
Tasha Yar?
Oh, what is Armus?
Yeah, Armus was that oil slick creature that killed Tasha Yar.
Oh.
So.
My brain does not have capacity to remember all of those tiny details. I have to remember other important things, like how to do my job so that I can get paid.
Yes. And I forget things about how to do my job just so I can remember all track. Yes. I'm like, what's her name? Arium. In this episode.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Steve's next, and he says 8 out of 10 spikes from the head. Yeah, no threat ganglia coming out of Saru this time.
I know, that was pretty awesome. I was like, oh my gosh, he's got spiky, throwy things.
Poisonous darts, maybe.
Yeah.
Probably not.
I wouldn't be surprised if they were something. Too bad they were completely blocked by personal force field or whatever it was.
Yeah.
Something like that.
All right. Next.
Okay. Next is Rick from Cleveland. Interesting episode. I rate it a 7 out of 10 spikes shooting out of Saru's neck.
Wow. Holy similar ratings, Batman. Yeah. I used that one a couple of times this week. Fred says, 9 out of 10, Bluffs Cliffs, Scarborough, Ontario, Canada. Yeah. Mainly because I've been there and walked where Saru and Michael walked. Yep. And I think I said on a previous episode, I had a first date there.
Oh, well, that's interesting.
Yes. And I won't go into more detail.
Okay, cool. Okay. Ken from Chicago says, 7 out of 10 seeming hours the prisoners had to wander and tinker with tech after dispatching their guards and chit-chat with the Discovery and make a major life-altering broadcast to their people. Also the time Pike allowed Saru to just sass-talk him in public. He was experiencing a severe case of sass mouth this episode.
Yes. He was salty Saru.
Salty Saru. I like sass mouth. I'm going to call him sass mouth Saru.
Sass mouth. Oh, that's a tongue twister. Yep. Sass mouth Saru.
Sass mouth Saru.
Yeah, Mr. Sassy Pants. All right. We have some yeses. Data, what do you think?
Yes.
That makes me chuckle every time.
Yep. All right, I'll do the first one. James has a couple here. He said, actually has three here. First is, Saru ain't taking no crap from no one. The fear is so far gone that he's even disobeying orders. And what's up with those crazy poison dart guns where his ganglia used to be? Where can I get some? I was wondering if this was a shot at Fuller saying, ha! Now that's funny.
Yeah.
We're talking something that was not well thought out and problematic and making it cool.
Yep.
And I wonder if that was ever in the cards for this. Like, was that planned out or were they simply, thankfully, writer's room, getting rid of that ganglia and actually making it cool? Because as we said, now that whole problematic fear thing and crazy avoidance, that's gone, not just for him, but for all Kelpians. And to that, I say yay.
You know, technically, if you think about it, I just realized this right now, and that's why I'm blurting it out. When in season one, when Emperor Giorgio was eating the Kelpian ganglia.
Yes.
It could have been the ganglia that fell off.
I don't think so.
Well, okay, probably not. But I was just thinking it could have been.
What I'm curious about is whether Giorgio ever had a Kelpian go through Vaharai.
Probably not.
Probably not.
I mean, they're clearly crazy docile and submissive before that, so...
Yes.
Pretty easy to...
And I'm going to use a term, which I hate, as you know, Ruthie, but it seems I can't get away from it, so I might as well embrace it. I'm going to write some headcanon here. Maybe we'll... it'll actually happen. But think about it. In the Mirror Universe, of course, the Terrans are overthrown eventually, and so that in the 24th century, they're no longer ruling. What if the Kelpians had Vaharai and ended up, they were instrumental in overthrowing the Terrans? Wouldn't that be cool? Would that be amazing?
That's not true.
Care, Luke. I still say. I would mix it up and play them in the opposite order that I normally do.
That's funny. Yeah. Yeah, that would be totally cool.
I don't know. I thought of it just off the top of my head here, but he's got a couple more. Like I said, he's got the look of the Ba'ul. Now, it's funny that James thinks it's cool, whereas other people do not. I love that. I love that, how everything is subjective and one man's
trash
is another man's treasure.
Yeah. Such a good turn of phrase.
It is. I think where TNG didn't do so well in creating the creature of this type with Armus, Discovery knocks it out of the park with a Ba'ul. I know that TNG didn't have near the budget or the effects of today, but Armus seemed to really fall flat to me, even when first run. Yeah.
Get it? Fall flat?
Fall flat. Yes.
Yeah.
The more I think about that, the more funny it is.
I know.
All right. Last one is Pike's capabilities when faced with potential conflict. He showed a lot of confidence with the Ba'ul, even under the threat of wiping out the Kelpians. I wonder how things would have played out had the Red Angel not disabled the ray gun thingamadoo.
That is a technical term.
Yes. Yes, I want some thingamadoos.
Not to be confused with a thingamajig.
Yeah. I think a thingamadoo is a more powerful thingamajig. It is a type 3 thingamajig, which is more powerful than a type 2 or a type 1.
Oh my gosh.
And this is my favorite part about doing podcasts with Ruthie.
Oh, goodness. Oh, gosh. Yep. Good stuff.
Yep.
Okay.
It's so nice to be podcasting with you on a show we both love.
Yes, that is very nice.
As opposed to the last show that we podcasted about.
That one of us didn't love anymore. Anyway.
And the other one is starting to fall right into place with that.
Yeah. Yes, as well. Yeah. You should. Anyway, Steve from Facebook says his yes is the spikes shooting out of Saru's head. I hope we get to see that again. Me too, Steve.
And here's a funny thing. You know that show we're talking about, insinuating about? Yeah, Steve, he's going to be guest hosting for me next week.
So. Sucker! Oh, sorry. I mean, thank you.
No. It's just in a little bit of a lull. Uh-huh. Once they get back to some questions that they need to answer, I think it'll be interesting again, but I just need a break. Anyway, we're talking way too much about that show this week.
I know.
Rick from Cleveland. Hey, Rick, say hi to Cleveland for me. He says, big yes for me. The fact that Saru could see the Red Angel and identify that it was someone in a suit.
Yeah.
Now, I just cannot wait to learn who. I suspect the who. It's what leads to Spock's mental state. Ooh. Ooh.
It's a trap.
Gotta go with the usual one.
Oh, gosh.
Anyway.
Yep.
Yeah.
Good times.
And Saru overstepping his bounds, both when he was reluctant to get out of the command chair. Yeah, I thought that was kind of funny. Mm-hmm. And again, when Pike had to throw him off the bridge. This is an interesting change in Saru, and I'm curious if it will extend past this episode.
I think it will.
I think so, too. Probably in fits and starts.
Yeah. Well, I mean, until he gets it under control a little bit.
Right.
But I don't think that Saru was necessarily reluctant to get out of the chair. He just kind of didn't really think about it.
Yeah.
Whereas before, he would have immediately hopped up as soon as he saw the captain. But now, he's like, yeah, man, what's up? Oh, your chair, right. That's kind of how I took it. But I also had that as one of my yeses.
Yeah.
Because the look on Pike's face was hysterical. Like, hello, get out of my chair.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's just Saru enjoying not fearing anything. Whereas before, he would have feared not getting out of the chair and jumping out as soon as Pike showed up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, let's talk about Saru for a minute here.
All right.
I think before his natural response was to be afraid of everything. But, I mean, I know we saw him working very hard to go against that. You know what I mean? Mm. Like, to not fall victim to his innate responses, I guess, if right. you will. And so it was like a constant struggle for him to not react that way. You know what I mean? To not have the immediate, oh crap, moments. You know what I'm saying?
And we see him doing that a lot, say, on the Shenzhou prior to the Klingons. Like the reactions he has where it's like at any level of risk, he's out, you know?
Yeah. And I think his character is going to provide a very good sort of portrayal of what a healthy dose of fear can do.
Yeah.
Because when you have too much fear, you get paralyzed by it, right?
Yeah,
it can literally freeze you to where you can't do anything.
Right.
And things like the flight or fight response or takeover and all that kind of stuff. So he's been battling this feeling that I think now that he's not constantly feeling it again, he doesn't comprehend what benefits a healthy dose of fear can give you.
Yeah.
Because in my thinking and not really experience, but my experience watching TV, a healthy dose of fear can keep you alive.
Yes.
And this is my fear for Saru going forward, is that he's been battling his fear for so long. Now that it's gone, I don't think he's going to necessarily realize what good it can do. And the balance that is needed in
the great balance,
Yeah. No, but I mean, you know, the balance that you need when you're dealing with fear, because courage is not the absence of fear. It's feeling the fear and doing it anyway.
Right.
Or knowing that something is dangerous and being afraid to do it, but moving forward, you know?
Yeah.
And so I think that's what's going to be interesting with Saru in the future. And I am looking forward to it because we already saw the serious changes, the biological and behavioral, as Pike said, changes that Saru is going through. And I think it's going to be pretty interesting because I think that in the very near future, he is going to do something, and it's going to have, more so than in this episode, he's going to do something that will either cause him to have a serious injury, a near-death type injury, or have some kind of drastic consequence.
Yeah.
That will make him realize that, because I'm sure now he's riding on a high. He's like, woo-hoo, you know, no fear, kind of that. I mean, because I don't know. I mean, I'm sure fear gives you adrenaline as well, but it's probably a different kind of adrenaline than he's feeling now. He's feeling aggressive and assertive and all that kind of stuff. So I think that is going to be the a good reality check for him to figure out that fear is not necessarily all bad.
I would concur with that.
Anyway, I just wanted to say all that stuff before I forgot.
And it is quite like Pollard. That's her name, right? Dr. Pollard. Yeah. Dr. Pollard said something about like it inhibits fear receptacles or something, but it doesn't seem like it completely eliminates them. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, that's what I'm kind of hoping is the case, that he still, like, he's not completely fearless. He just fears less.
Right. Right.
You know?
Yeah.
Because otherwise, like you say, if he's completely fearless, then, you know, if he's commanding the starship, he may take them into places that are foolhardy and, would put the entire crew and ship at risk, at where Pike or any other sensible captain would have not done. So,
And it's probably, like I said, he's probably just having to adjust to this different feeling of not always fighting this crippling fear, because when you're pushing against a wall all the time and suddenly it's not there, you just go tumbling forward. And I think that's what he's experiencing right now, is he's just been pushing against this wall of fear for so long that now that it's not there, he's just sort of free falling and will eventually equalize, normalize. So, but his little spike thrower thing was awesome. Anyway.
I just had a funny thought that's related, you know, and we see it here that, of course, who discovers Saru, but Lieutenant at the time, Giorgio. And now who's alive? Giorgio, who used to eat Kelpians. And I wonder what she'll think of these kind of Kelpians, because they won't be scared anymore. So does that mean that they're tender and tasty, even without the threat ganglia?
Somehow, I don't think so.
I don't think so either. Probably unpalatable.
Yeah, no kidding.
So, let's not find out.
Yeah, no
kidding. All right. We got one more set of yeses from listeners. So, Fred is last, and he said, of course, he's not last. He's not last. He's just last in the list. He says, filming at Bluffs Cliffs 7 Beach, Scarborough, Ontario, Canada. I think he liked that beach.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, because it's in so many TV shows. Every time he sees it, he's like, I would be too.
Yeah. I know it's been in a bunch of them. Anything that pretty much shoots in Toronto uses it. So last is how Doug Jones plays the new Saru.
Yeah.
All right. So what about our yeses? Ruthie, what do you have?
Again, it's not a yes unless I've got one from Tilly. When she says, when I said we, I just meant Aryam.
I am so happy you mentioned that one because I didn't write it down, but I certainly loved that when she said it.
Yep, that was funny.
Yep. What else you got?
Well, I said my other one already.
Oh, okay.
Captain Pike waiting for Saru to get out of his chair.
Ah, yeah. Okay, so I had three. And, of course, they're all Kelpian related. The unexpected twist that the Kelpians were once the predators and the Ba'ul were the prey. I thought that was a nice one. And it finally explains some things about how, you know, these Kelpians were, you know, could run these, like, 80 kilometers an hour and were ridiculously strong, and yet they were the prey. And we said back then, it's like, well,
that doesn't make any sense.
If they can do all these things, like, can you imagine how these predators must be? But turns out that, you could say that the predators aren't that scary, but they are kind of scary. They're just scary in a way that I didn't expect them to be. And how they had that kind of Borg kind of communication thing, you know, synthesized or like distorted communication and stuff like that. But specifically though, I thought that this twist explained the Kelpians much better, and it, all those like strange things that we couldn't figure out, suddenly all of it makes sense now. So I think that was a really well thought out explanation for it. Yeah. The use of the universal translator, and that has come up a few times recently, of course. Mm-hmm. I thought how they did it in this episode was really good. I mean, they made it obvious that they were, of course, hearing their own languages, but we were given some artistic liberty that the director was taking, but essentially we could tell by the way that they shot it and the use of the, you know, sounds in the background that things were being translated. So it wasn't done the same way, say, it was on the Klingon sarcophagus ship in the first season, but I like this just as well. So I thought it was well done. And specifically, Serana saying to Burnham, "Do humans from Earth drink tea?" I like that. A nice little thing. And I figured you might say something from Tilly, so I figured I'd give another quote. Yep. All right. Next is our nose.
No!
Okay. You want to read James's?
All right. James says, you can count on this one every time we don't see her. No Jet Reno. Did I mention she's my favorite character?
Actually, you did.
Once or twice.
Yeah.
Then he says, my theory's constantly being shot down this week, being that the Ba'ul are not evolved Kelpians. Oh, well, I'm not the writer. LOL.
Yes, and we won't get into it too much, but this was a point in that one of the long bits of feedback that we got from Brian saying that we shouldn't use theory to explain these things, that hypothesis or something of that nature would be more accurate, where theories are things that scientists spend spend months, even years on developing. So I'd say, okay, although so many people use it, I think it's kind of a lost cause at this point.
Well, I think if you're talking about science, then that's the kind of theory you're talking about.
Yes.
If you're not talking about science, then...
They don't call it conspiracy hypotheses.
Yeah.
So.
That's true.
Yeah.
Different words, or the same words, can have different meanings in different instances.
I do get what his point, though, in the written feedback, though, is that he thought you should still not use it because Star Trek is a science fiction program, heavily, you know, on science or pseudoscience. So I get it. Well,
I get what he's saying. However, when a certain word has permeated the current vernacular,
yeah,
you can't really change it or expect people to change it just for one show.
Yeah.
Because fan theories are a thing.
Yes. In fact, like podcast, for example, that wasn't a thing initially. They called it, you know, like, was it internet radio or something like that? Or like, I know Leah Laporte wanted to call it netcasts, and that didn't take off because that's what Steve Jobs called it. Podcasts. So forever, that's what they're called.
Because it was on an iPod.
Yep. Yeah, that was before the iPhone. So yeah. iPod. All right. Next is Rick from Cleveland. He has a no. He says, no for me was Discovery versus the Ba'ul. This is a 10-on-1 confrontation, and the Ba'ul already scanned Discovery's weapons and seemed to know they had the upper hand. Pike's confidence, while interesting, was one hell of a gamble. Even Kirk came up with the Corbomite, of course, the Corbomite maneuver, to bluff the superior force, which was a very early TOS episode. I believe it was like the first one shot after the second pilot. Although it was shown later, but that's the one with, what's his name? Clint Howard as a little kid.
Oh, right.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was an interesting episode.
Yes. The First Federation. That's what they called them. All right. Next.
Okay. Fred, the Ba'ul, how they look, move, talk, actually all of it. They look like Venom from the Marvel series. Venom, who was played by Tom Brady, who also not Tom Brady, sorry, oh crap, I just forgot his name.
Tom Brady.
I know, not the quarterback, so sorry. Tom, what is his name? Crap.
Tom, I don't know what show is this?
He played Venom.
Oh, Tom Hardy.
Tom Hardy, thank you. Tom Hardy, who also played young Captain Picard on Nemesis.
/ Shinzon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry, that was the link.
So now it's our
Venom.
Our nose.
And when we say our, we really just mean yours.
Oh.
Sorry. I hardly ever come up with any, but then when we start talking about the episode, I might have some. But for right now, I got nothing.
Well, my big one was the lack of a B plot. Specifically, there was a B plot, but it was pretty minimal. That was Kober coming to terms, or barely coming to terms, with, you know, his resurrection, for lack of a better term. I wanted to see more of that, and I think that would have helped the episode be a little higher in a grade. So, because like, it wasn't so much what was going on with Saru and the Kelpians that was missing. I think it was the B plot for me that was missing. It needed more. And I'm not really sure why. It was like literally just the two scenes in sickbay, and that's about it. So,
yeah, I thought it seemed to me like there were a few sort of side plots going on that didn't really all, like, none of them got all that much attention. So,
well, I know Tilly and Irium, you know, going through the stuff from the big ball of 100,000 years. I don't know what to call it, but
Galaxy Pie.
The Galaxy Pie. Yes.
Yeah. And there was also the Ash Tyler stuff.
Yeah. Wasn't too much of that though.
That's what I'm saying. But, there was a little bit from a lot of different places or whatever. So,
yeah.
So, I mean, maybe if they just picked one and
I think they should have picked Culber.
Yeah.
Personally.
Well, I mean, he did just show up last week. So,
yeah. All right. Next is, I think the Ba'ul were a little bit lame for that. Like, wouldn't you think the Ba'ul, knowing that, you know, Kelpians that had transformed were pretty strong and that, like, shouldn't they have developed better restraints?
Maybe.
Saru, he just, like, busted crushed those that. Things and, you know, the weapons that came through, they were no match for him. I just thought that whole thing was pretty lame with that respect. And I said in here in the notes, I said no force fields. Well, there actually was. We did see some force fields, and that had to do with when his spikes came out. But
yeah,
like
no force field restraints.
Yeah, yeah. So there's that. I have something that's related in the hold your horses, but I'll save that for later. But third thing that's show related or episode related. It's pretty clear that they had to cut the budget a bit on this episode, probably because of all the money that was spent before. Like the Ba'ul ship, parts of it, like I could see the transporter room, like clear as day in there. Like it was just lit differently. It didn't look any different at all. And there were some other things specifically with the Ba'ul ship, where it's like they didn't really even cover it up very well. It was clearly parts of the Discovery. So I thought, understood why they did that. Like clearly they must have really, really had to cut the budget on this one. But I just thought that it could have been a little better. It was so noticeable. Especially the ones with that round area. It was like, oh, that's a transporter room.
Oh, I did not notice that at all.
Well, have another look and you'll see it.
Okay.
And the last thing, and this is something I noticed, but I noticed it especially this episode because of the Ba'ul. The Ba'ul are, it's B-A-apostrophe-U-L. But you wouldn't know that if you watched the subtitles from CBS All Access. They don't have apostrophes at all in their subtitles. And I'm not sure why, but this is something I've noticed going at least through season 2. I have not seen an apostrophe in any of the subtitles or the captions, I should say, in the whole 6 episodes. I don't know why, but they're not there. And it's not just things like the Ba'ul. It's any time where, like, oh, Burnham's going over there, and it's like spelled like plural. Multiple Burnhams, yeah. You know,
plural instead of possessive.
Yes. And I've seen that over possessive. And over again. Don't go there, spelled D-O-N-T. It's like at the point, this is something I've been thinking of saying, but after this episode, it was so prevalent here. I just had to bring it up.
Yeah.
So just nitpicky, I know, but come on, CBS.
I know, right?
Yeah.
You're making us pay for this.
Yep. I think it's time to have a better closed caption service. All right. Speaking of Tilly.
Hello, this is Captain Tilly. What the heck? Hell. What the hell? Hold your horses.
Never gets tired.
Nope.
All right. Want to read James's?
Okay. James from Facebook says, Saru not acknowledging Pike on the bridge and vacating the chair right away. I know he's lost the fear aspect, but is he also gaining too much self-confidence and cockiness? Is this foreshadowing on why the Kelpians were cold in the first place? I really hope they don't build his arc to him become a character that feels he's above everyone.
I hadn't thought of that last part.
I did, honestly. Honestly, if you think about it, there are two sides to every story. They're immediately demonizing the Ba'ul because of what's happening, but we don't really know why they did that. We're just immediately assuming that because it's the Kelpians that are being persecuted, that the Ba'ul are wrong and evil.
Yeah.
That's not necessarily true. We don't know what made the Ba'ul do this.
Well,
so
we do know that according to the Galaxy Pi, that apparently they were nearly extinguished. You know, they were almost extinct before they, I guess, fought back and came up with this whole thing that they do.
Right.
So,
but we don't know why they were nearly extinct. What happened to cause that situation? Why they were in that, I guess, situation, whatever. Why the two were like that. We don't know why.
It seems like they just blame it on Kelpian rage.
Well, maybe they're blaming that on Kelpian rage because that's a real thing. We don't know. We don't know if... And honestly, almost the entire time I'm watching this episode, I keep thinking to myself, okay, they just created all these fearless Kelpians, and Saru seems pretty confident that they're not gonna, you know, freak out.
Yeah.
But I don't know why he would be so confident, because he's had quite a few years to adjust to this. Whereas the rest of them have about 3 seconds.
Yeah.
So I was not sure that Saru should promise such a thing as, oh, we'll be better. Like, yeah, I don't know if you can say that.
Yeah.
Or if you should say that. So I don't know. I mean, yes, I would like to believe that the Kelpians are the good guys and the Ba'ul are the bad guys. They certainly... made it appear that way, but just because that's how it appears does not mean that that's how it is.
Right.
We really don't know. I mean, it's been 1,000 years, right? Or something. It's been a long time.
Yeah, I think they said 2,000 years.
So a really long
time. Something like that. Yeah. Yeah.
And I mean, the Kelpians don't know, obviously. They don't remember. The Ba'ul do. And... I mean, they could be justified in acting this way.
Mm-hmm.
Then again, maybe not. We don't really know. That's my whole thing. We don't really know.
Right.
And I hope that we don't discover in a very explosive way that, oh, crap, we shouldn't have done that kind of a thing.
Yeah.
So, but I agree. I hope that Saru does not turn into a snooty know-it-all. Or a cocky, snooty know-it-all.
Well, Steve is next, and he brings up a good point here. And I know, you know, Steve has many years served in the Air Force, so this is a good kind of military thought. Activating evolution on a global scale doesn't break General Order 1?
Very good point.
Yeah, I had wondered that myself, but then again... You know, the Red Angel intervened, and I guess that would be a good hold your horses. The Red Angel intervened. Mm-hmm. We see the Red Angel. And it might be a trap. Who knows?
Yeah.
I don't think it's a trap. No. But, all right, and... We also have from Ken from Chicago.
Oh, I think I probably stole his thunder. Sorry, Ken. Ken from Chicago says, so, are the Ba'ul related to the skin of evil that killed Tasha Yar on TNG?
It would be, Interesting to think about.
I don't think so, though.
Yeah. But he's got a really good one here that technically wasn't a hold your horses, but I put it as one because it sounded like one to me.
Yes. And this is where I think I accidentally stole his thunder a little bit. Sorry. People assume the Kelpians are being eaten because it's called a harvest, and they act as if these sacrifices are killed. But the show never shows them eaten or even dead. They could be slaves, servants, soldiers, or even students educated about the greater galaxy. Yeah.
Yeah. Although I think at this point we can assume from the Ba'ul that they were killed, but it seems like they certainly were not eaten.
Yeah, I think we assumed eaten because of the mirror universe.
Yeah. Yeah. And I wondered, for that matter, why would the Kelpians hunt the Ba'ul? Because they didn't look very tasty to me.
Well, you know, there's different kind of hunting, not just hunting for food, hunting for sport.
True. That's true.
So, yeah, there is that. All right, then he says, finally, by the way, are all doctors in Starfleet that cut, or is it just Dr. Hugh? Hashtag gun show. And I responded that it is a requirement.
That's funny. Fred has our last hold your horses from the listeners. He says, could the Ba'ul build these kind of spaceships in the physical form they are in? Plus living in liquid? That is interesting.
Yeah, don't know.
It almost seems like they're like crab or something, like they're living in the mud. Maybe that's what that whole thing was with them. That's like mud or oil slick or, oh yeah, Armus. I don't know.
Who knows?
Do you have any hold your horses?
Nope.
All right.
Not right now.
Will Arium be taken over or transformed by the Galaxy Pi? I don't know. But that was a thought that I had. Because we still haven't seen like a really heavy, well, not that it would be that heavy, but we haven't seen Arium be featured too much yet. So I just wonder if she's working on that. Maybe something will happen and all the history will get loaded into her or something. Mm. Anyway.
That would be very interesting.
Where did the Ba'ul go when Saru freed himself and put his plan into action? Now, this felt very James Bond villain to me, you know?
Yeah, that is an excellent question.
I'm going to kill you, Bond. Now, I have tied you in on rope on top of this, you know, water that's 50 feet deep, but before that, infested with sharks. But before I do that, I'm going to go get some soup.
Don't go anywhere. I'll be back in a bit.
That's I think somebody else mentioned something like this. Like the Ba'ul, they're just not there. And Saru's able to like get his restraints off, you know, get Serana's restraints off, basically
destroy the drone,
send out a signal. Like, and like, what, where are they? I didn't understand this. So I think that also affected my score quite a bit, at least about a half point. So I think that could have been written a little bit better. It almost seemed again like it could have been stuff that had to be taken off because of budget. So maybe there was a scene there where the Ba'ul were part of that and were fighting with Saru and they had to cut it because it was too expensive. I don't know.
Yep, maybe so.
Something else I noticed, Tyler, he had either a copper or gold uniform. Yet again, those two colors are too similar, I think. But ultimately, I was able to figure out that I think he was wearing a copper uniform. Mm. But he had his Section 31 badge on it.
Mm.
So I thought that was interesting. So that I just put there because where else are you going to put it? All right, that's it for me. So let's move on to our feedback section. All right, and first we have a voicemail from Mark.
Hi guys, Mark from Ontario, Canada here. I give this episode 7.5 delicious slices of galaxy pie. I found this episode to be a fun one, but not much more than that. There was no gripping the edge of my seat moments, but I found it very entertaining nonetheless. Now, I predicted last week that Saru might become more confrontational, and I think we saw a little bit of it in this week's episode, where now that his fear has been suppressed, he's standing up a lot more. At one point, he approached Pike, and Pike actually stepped back as Saru approached him before Michael intervened and said that it might be a good idea to take him down to the planet. But it just shows a little bit how he's changed. Now, I have some ups and down moments for this episode. First of all, my ups. I thought the Baul ships were really cool. I mean, we didn't get to see very much of them, but I thought they were really neat, a different type of design. I also thought the Baul themselves looked really cool, coming out of the water and all dripping in black. What I loved about it is that we didn't really get a clear sense of what they look like. And the other up is we speculated that the budget was blown in the first few episodes and we wouldn't be getting very much. But budget-wise, I thought this episode looked really good, so I did appreciate that. Now, as for my downs, I am not a fan of Saru's new built-in defense system, whatever it is, those needle things, because I'm afraid it's going to become a case of too convenient to use them, or there'll be situations where we're going to say, well, why didn't he use them? Another thing I didn't really like is at one point when Saru beamed down to the planet, Pike says, who is it? And all of a sudden, Michael calls from the transporter room and says, burn him to bridge. It's Saru. As if she was answering Pike's question, but obviously she couldn't have heard Pike's question. So why would she just say, burn him to bridge, it's Saru, he's surrendering himself, instead of something like, Saru just transported to the planet or beamed down to the planet, he's surrendering himself. And another down that I had was, I had a very hard time understanding the Baul when they were talking. I had to turn on closed captioning to make sure I was understanding everything. Now I do have a few hold your horses moments. One, I still find it hard to believe that Saru is the first Kelpian in over 3,000 years to undergo this Valhari or whatever you call it, and that in all that time, not a single Kelpian, even if they were too afraid or refused or ran away and didn't want to be culled, I find that a little bit hard to believe. Another hold your horses moment is just Saru making a lot of assumptions for his entire species that they won't feel rage against the Baul. Now that they're not feeling fear, how can he speak for them saying, well, no, Kelpians aren't going to react that way? He has no way of knowing that. Without that fear holding them, I'm sure some of the Kelpians will want some sort of revenge and feel rage against the Baul. Now, a few observations from the episode. It's hard to imagine an entire planet like that with a combined population of under 30,000. The other thing I found funny is when they were going through the records from the sphere, at one point, several thousand years ago, the population between evolved Kelpian, unevolved Kelpian, and Baul was evenly spread. But as the evolved Kelpian's population went up, then the Baul's went down, but so did the unevolved Kelpian. At one point, it said that there were no unevolved Kelpians on the planet. Does that mean that they were born evolved? It didn't make sense that there were no unevolved Kelpians on the planet. And speaking of evolved and unevolved, if this Valhari is a natural evolution of Kelpians, what are the consequences of triggering it early? They said all Kelpians underwent it. That means even the children did. And if this is supposed to be a natural evolution for them, what happens if they go through it early? That would be the equivalent of what happens if a human toddler was forced to go through puberty at age 2 or 3. What would happen to them? Anyways, this is Mark from Ontario, Canada, out.
And let that be a public service announcement. Don't feed your kid milk with growth hormone.
Yeah. I think that is a very good point about forcing every single Kelpian to go through this change.
Yeah.
I think that's going to have consequences that are unforeseen. And hopefully it won't be terrible. As far as no unevolved Kelpians, I would say that that could have been during a period when perhaps they just had no births.
Huh.
They had like a just a either a very low or no birth rate, basically. That's kind of what I think anyway.
Or it could have been not zero, but close to zero or something like that.
Statistically zero or something or whatever.
Or maybe they were just looking at adult Kelpians and not considering the children.
Yeah, maybe.
I don't know.
Who knows?
I didn't pick up on the under 30,000. So when was that mentioned? I didn't pick up on that at all. But I liked your point about not getting a good look at the Ba'ul. It was kind of very distorted, and I like that. And I saw, you know, you said that you didn't like the way that they spoke. So you liked how you couldn't see them very well, but you didn't like how they spoke. So it's kind of funny. But I was kind of the opposite. I mean, I liked the way they spoke, but I found the way that you couldn't see them, it was kind of not off-putting, but like I kept trying to figure out, like, what do these things look like? Like, I'd see certain silhouettes that made them almost look like crabs or lobster, like something in that, with that in mind. I don't know. And you didn't see the budget, but I already mentioned places where I could definitely see the budget. It was just in that one spot. I didn't see it all the way through. It was just when they were on the Ba'ul ship. So, all right. Our last voicemail that we got is, of course, from our friend who, of course, the wonderful images that are put together every episode, Fred from the Netherlands. He's got his voicemail here.
Hello, Brian and Rosie. This is Fred from the Netherlands with some feedback for Star Trek Discovery Season 2, Episode 6. First off, getting back to the biggest question of last week's podcast, is there DNA in human tear fluid? Well, there could be a little bit of viruses or extracellular DNA, but in principle, in tear fluid, there is a enzyme called DNase. And DNase destructs every DNA in tear fluid, as well human DNA as bacterial DNA. And of course, this is a very good defense against a bacteria, because if the DNA of the bacteria is destructed, they cannot replicate. So that's actually antibacterial feature of the tear fluid. But nevertheless, I didn't fully understand why this tear could be so important, and that could explain the whole stuff with Hugh Culber getting back. Okay, about this episode, what did I think? In the beginning, I had some nitpicks, because at about 6 minutes into the episode, there is this discussion between Tyler Burnham and Pike about the red signals, and they have in front of them, they have this star chart with the red signals in it. And this is filmed in such a nervous way. The camera keeps spinning and spinning and spinning and spinning around them. I almost got seasick by it. For 1 minute and 15 seconds, it was just spinning around them. And I don't know why. It was a quite static conversation. And then, okay, if you do this a little bit. I don't know if you noticed it, but I found it quite annoying. What was very funny, of course, is that Saru didn't get up out of Pike's captain's chair. Pike didn't say anything. He just stared at Saru, and at a certain point, he understood he should get up. So I think that was funny. What was very well played was Saru opposing to Pike. On the other hand, I found it so out of character. We're so used to Saru being, not submissive, but polite, etc., that I really have to get used to it. And I found it a little out of character, but actually it's not, because he is another character. And when Saru got in his almost argument with Pike, it was nice of Burnham to step in between and de-escalate it. What also was a bit hold your horses, more or less, is that when Pike made contact to the Ba'ul and he said to Saru that he should not intervene and not take part in the conversation, that when Saru started saying something, Pike didn't remove him from the bridge immediately. And I think Saru was given the chance to say far too much. And at the end, Pike did remove Saru from the bridge, but that took quite a while. I didn't like at all how they portrayed the Ba'ul. It reminded me of a action figure my son had when he was 5, 6 or something like that, of Venom, one of the creatures out of one of the Marvel series. I think it was Spider-Man or something like that. Not very well done. Of course, I did like the filmed again at...
Brett, shut up!
Oh no, not again. Ruthie, you're right. 4 minutes. Time's up. Okay, bye.
Yeah, it even said, Fred, shut up.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, because it's worth noting that Fred did give me that. So that's this.
Shut up! Oh, man. Of course, that was me imitating Tilly.
Yeah.
And she yelled, shut up, on the bridge, which was quite hysterical.
Yeah. Well, thanks for the tears research.
Yes.
Yeah. It doesn't seem like it's the best place for the DNA, but I also, of course, liked what Jenny said earlier.
Yeah. Yeast offensive bodily fluid.
Yeah. Like the whole, but how does memories get carried over? You know,
has memories, personality, life experiences, et cetera,
All those. Because even Spock, he had to retrain his brain.
Yeah.
So he may have gotten his soul back, but he didn't get back his knowledge. So it's just worth saying that.
Well, it seemed like he just kind of had to, I don't know.
Do a crash course?
Well, like re-access, sort of.
Yeah.
Like reorganize his memory.
Maybe.
So it like in a way that his brain could access it, I guess, is what I was kind of.
How do you feel?
Yeah.
How do you feel? I do not understand the question.
Yeah.
Star Trek 4 reference for those of you that don't get that one.
Yeah. I mean, that's kind of what I thought, because he obviously had knowledge. He just,
yeah.
It seems like it was not organized in a way that he could access it. And so that was really what he was doing, is he was having to sort of reorganize it. So in a way, yes, he was having to train his brain, but.
Yeah. I'm curious to see where they're going to go with this Culber. It's not only that he's not himself, he's a new Culber.
Yeah.
So
brand new in every way.
Yeah. And it's worth saying that it seems like we have several characters that are like that. You know, we had Culber featured here a little bit. We have Saru like this, but we also even have Tyler and Giorgio, because she's completely a different character. Mm-hmm. And even Tilly and Burnham for certain extents. Tilly, I'd say more so than Burnham now, because Tilly went through that whole experience on the mycelial plane. So, and of course, May inhabiting her. So, and probably other characters that I'm not even thinking about right now.
Yeah.
I will agree. I am not a big fan of the spinning camera either.
It didn't bother me, really.
Like, one thing that there was it NYPD Blue used to do this thing where they would jerk the camera around and stuff like that. And I also see that on like single camera sitcoms. That kind of stuff drives me nuts. It just makes me dizzy.
Yeah.
When I watch.
I'm not a huge fan of a jerky camera, but yeah. A smooth moving in a circle didn't really bother me. Hmm. I was going to say also, I think maybe Pike did not cut Saru off right away because he sort of maybe wanted to see what he would say or see what would happen. I kind of let it play out a little bit, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah.
I feel like he would have a reason for not immediately shutting him down. Because he, despite how it might have appeared, I think he's very in control of his bridge at all times. So,
yes.
If he had wanted to put the kibosh on that, he would have.
And I think eventually when Saru is kind of like way out of line, he dismisses him. And I think, though, before that, like especially in the previous scene that saw on the bridge, although Saru's being a bit of an issue, and of course Burnham has to kind of step in and say it would be good for him to be on. And I agree. I mean, I kind of get where Pike was going, but I got to agree with Burnham that if she's going to go down on a planet, she's going to have a much easier time
with a native
going with Saru than not going with Saru.
Yeah.
But certainly he's going through some changes. And turn and face the strange. So he's going through all that, and his behavior is, I would say, somewhat unpredictable, or at least it was at that moment. In a crisis, you don't necessarily want an unpredictable element. So I get that part of it, but he still needed Saru there.
Yeah.
All right. We've got written feedback now. Ruthie, why don't you read Todd's?
Okay. Let's see here. Todd from Facebook says, okay, that was, and I'm assuming he said meant odd cinematographic choice. Just started watching, and the shot in the captain's quarters going around in a circle with Michael, Ash, and Pike, it was making me dizzy. Ugh. This show keeps getting better and better. I almost wonder if these evolved Kelpians will ultimately evolve into the Ba'ul. Just a feeling. I was definitely getting Stargate vibes when the Ba'ul first popped out of the lake inside the fortified bunker. Yeah. Uh-huh. Me too.
Yeah. It doesn't seem like that's the case, though. That's pretty much proved out at the end that the Ba'ul were the prey. And it's interesting to think about, like, how did they fight back, and how did, like, if they were nearly extinct? You kind of said something similar to this, I think, didn't you? How did they gain the upper hand? It'd be my question. Mm. All right. Next is James again. Hi, James, who is helping out collecting all the feedback. So thank you very much, James. And I owe a lot of people some showcase awards and little Price is Right things. So I could just take them all and do them all now. I'll just play them in multiple succession. Thank you, Jenny. Thank you, Fred. Thank you, Steve. Thank you, Mark. There, took care of all of them. And of course, thank you, James. If anyone's feeling left out, sorry. All right. James says, this episode was good. It had some great high points and told a solid story. I will again go back to the brightest star and why I really didn't care for it. It could have summarized in the first couple minutes of this episode, as was partially done. And I'm going to stop right there, because one thing I had thought of is I wondered, watching this, if the short treks came out of this episode, like they said, oh, well, we have to take this one out because it's too long, and why don't we put this in its own little short? And then I thought, oh, maybe we could do some shorts. That was the thought there, that it had grown out of, or this episode being too long, and that they, rather than just make one short, they made four.
Maybe.
I don't know. I don't know if that's true or not. That was just conjecture on my point. It was speculation. It wasn't a theory, Brian. It wasn't a theory. Anyway. Let's see. Going back to this. As well as the issue I brought up a couple of weeks ago, in that none of the Kelpians being culled appeared sick, I know I'm in the minority on not liking that short, and sorry to keep harping on it. Just wasn't my jam. I like that the main arc was progressed in this episode as well. It's definitely unfolding very differently than what I thought it would, but the story has me so enthralled and constantly thinking about what may happen next, and that is the goal of any great story, to keep the audience attention and immerse them into the tale. Can't wait for Spock next week and looking forward to your guys' thoughts on the episode, Brian and Ruthie. Well, thank you so much, James.
Yeah, I will say I am also looking forward to Spock next week. Alrighty. Next we have Rick from Cleveland, Brian's old stomping grounds. Overall, a good way to move forward. Maybe even tie up the Kelpian Bowel story. The best part is we can now stop wondering about that and move on. As for me, the Kelpian backstory is not all that interesting, probably because the species is a Disco add-on.
Huh.
I'm looking.
Yeah, that's I could see that.
Yeah. Well, yeah, whatever. I'm looking forward to a lot as the season heads to the back half. Culber's story looks to be very interesting as he heads for an arc, perhaps wrestling with who or what he is now. Is his feeling just new nervous system senses or something more? It seems to be that the story is leading us to believe that the Red Angel is someone or something we know, perhaps from the future. Someone with ties to the Discovery crew, Spock, the Klingons, and apparently Terra Elysium. I've seen theories online that the Red Angel is Spock Prime, and this was part of his journey back in time before he arrived in the Kelvin timeline. I hope this is not the case. I should not like to see old Spock portrayed by anyone but Leonard Nimoy. It's far too soon for that. Gotta agree with you there.
Yeah, and for that matter, don't listen to any theories by Midnight's Edge. Their sole purpose in life is to make sure that Discovery and all the new Star Treks are canceled. So
great.
They display things that they say are researched and all of it is made up.
Right.
Do not believe them.
Okay. That said, it just occurred to me that there is another logical possibility. Perhaps the Red Angel is some future version of Michael herself. That would explain all but the Terra Elysium connection. Just an idea, and I've been wrong more often than right.
Yeah, I had mentioned a few episodes back when I had seen a screen capture of, I think it was the second episode, that the character in that, I think it was in the second episode now, I think about it. The Red Angel that was captured in the video footage that we see Pike looking at looked like Burnham. So.
Yes, I remember you saying that.
At this point, I don't know. And perhaps it's some aliens and perhaps it's the Discovery crew and some combination. I don't know. At this point, I could go crazy trying to figure out what it is. I'm just going to let it progress and not try to figure it out too much.
Yeah. It could be Michael. And as for the Terra Elysium connection, it could be, and this is kind of a, I can't remember what it's called. What's it called when you're not a time loop necessarily, but a causal loop, maybe, the only connection for Terra Elysium is that they saw that it had been done, so they had to do it.
Right.
So, which is a very confusing time travel thing for me.
Like a paradox?
Yeah, kind of, nobody knows why it was done originally, I guess, if you can even say right. Originally, because the only reason they're doing it is because it had been done.
Right.
So they had to do, I don't know. It confuses me, but I've seen that used in so many time travel shows.
Right.
Where we did this, so we have to do it. Kind of a thing. It's like I said, it's not a very good reason, but it's a reason or a connection. I don't know. I don't really think that Star Trek would pull that necessarily, but I have seen that before. You know what I'm talking about?
Well, yeah, and you know, makes me think of like the fact that what was the thing with Harry Kim? He was a different Harry Kim somehow, and I think O'Brien was 90 minutes from the future or something like that. In another Deep Space Nine episode. I forget. I had seen the Deep Space Nine episode recently, but the Voyager one I haven't seen in a while. My rewatch of Voyager is kind of on hold right now, so I just don't have the bandwidth.
I'm not sure I know what your...
I'd have to go back and look it up.
Okay. Well, I don't know. I mean, I've just seen a lot of times before that the only reason characters do something is because when they were experiencing their first timeline or whatever, that, you know, XYZ experience or whatever event happened. And so they basically had to do it again or whatever. Mm. And of course, I'm completely drawing a blank on any examples, but surely someone out there knows what I'm talking about. Anyway, so yeah, that's all I got.
The Harry Kim episode, and I did have to look it up, just so you know, my memory wasn't that good. It was the episode Deadlock, where apparently the Voyager continues on its way with a different version of Kim and Naomi Wildman. And there is a Deep Space Nine episode. It is the episode Visionary from season 3.
Can you tell me what happened? I mean, I have no idea.
Well, the plot, after receiving a minor dose of radiation poisoning, O'Brien inexplicably begins experiencing a series of jumps into the near future. Meanwhile, a Romulan delegation arrives on the station, expecting an intelligence report on the Dominion. And he keeps on like jumping in time, and he runs across himself. Mm. And he even like will tell himself, you know, not to do this, and you know, it changes the time. And anyway, there's several of that. And then I think at the end, the future O'Brien goes back to the past, and it's the same O'Brien, but he's from the future.
Okay. Well. Yeah. Not really anything like what I was talking about, I guess.
Okay. Haven't played that one in a while. All right. Just got our own notes here. So do you have anything else you wanted to bring up in the episode?
I really, really wanted someone to state the odds of the signal coming from Kaminar.
Yeah.
They said, what are the odds of that? I really wanted someone to blurt out, well, the odds are blah, blah, blah to one or whatever.
Yeah, and if Burnham were playing, you know, her inner Vulcan, she probably would have done that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Alas, it was not to be.
And they mentioned that that Kaminar is not in Federation space, so I was curious, like, how far away is it?
Yeah.
Anything else?
I kind of already talked about this, but I wrote down, poor Saru isn't accustomed to dealing with not being afraid. He's going to do something stupid. Oh my goodness. And yeah, just more about the, what did they do so long ago that so frightens the Ba'ul, and that I don't think that Saru can promise that the Kelpians won't be crazy or whatever, because yeah, he's already experiencing his aggression. Add that to rage. Yes. Bloody, bloody. I think that's about it.
Yeah.
Also, I also wrote down, poor Hugh, all brand new again.
I didn't have much that we didn't already cover. The one question that I was curious about, and I mentioned this last week, is... Well, okay.
That was weird.
I might leave that in depending on how it sounds, but that was a weird barking doggy.
Yeah.
Very weird. Anyway, the question that I had, because I mentioned how damaged is Discovery, and in this episode, it didn't seem very damaged at all. But it also seemed like there had been a bit of a passage of time, because we see Tilly and Irium trying to go through the data that came from the big mud ball.
Yeah.
Galaxy Pie, whatever you want to call it. So I had wondered specifically how much time had passed. If I had to take a guess, I was thinking maybe a couple of weeks or maybe a week or something. But then again, it did seem like the Discovery had a lot of damage, and I would imagine it would take them a while to repair that. But then again, maybe when they escape the realm of mycelial plane or whatever, maybe that damage went away, but I kind of doubt it. So anyway, I'm still thinking about that from last week. And I would say, if I had to rank them, I'd say that this is probably my least favorite of the six so far, but it's still a pretty good episode. And it's certainly better than, I would say, like the season finale from last year, which had some issues there. It was good. I mean, it was still in the nine. So, you know, obviously I loved it. I just didn't love it as much as last week, because I really loved last week. Mm-hmm. All right. If that's it, we just got a couple of little news items.
I said one more thing that I was going to say.
But Ruthie has one more thing.
I forgot. I also wrote down that I guess it's true what they say, is you can never go home again.
Yeah, that's true. Literally. Although when he got there, it seemed like things were exactly the way they were.
Yeah, but he was different. That's really what that's saying.
He definitely was.
I think. So it's everything might be the same, but usually you're the one who's different. So it's really not the same. Anyway, it was interesting, I thought.
All right. Well, we just got a couple of news items. Let's just play a shipwide announcement. Haven't heard that yet. I think we've heard other things for that, but
yeah,
not doesn't quite sound the same. Mary Wiseman got married over the weekend. So to that, I'll say two things. I'll say this. And then maybe I'll add a little splash of, I don't know his name, but I know it's like her longtime boyfriend. So boyfriend / fiance, obviously. So congrats to Mary and hubby. So
yes,
good news. Also, I saw a little bit of this, but just so you know, the Ready Room, this week's episode, you might be shocked to find out, but it is Doug Jones.
Mm.
Of course it is. So other than that, couldn't really find out much news. More, when I look at the websites, it's more speculation, and that I really haven't seen much since the Nickelodeon announcement. So, all right. That is it for this week's episode. So, Ruthie, why don't you tell people how they can contact us?
Alrighty. To submit your theories and feedback, go to goldenspiralmedia.com/feedback, where you can submit text, audio, or audio on the SpeakPipe widget. So, text or audio. You can also call us at 304-837-2278. Or you can email us at StarTrekGSM@gmail.com. You can also post in our designated episode thread in our Facebook group, which is facebook.com/groups/Star Trek Discovery Podcast. You can tweet us at at Star Trek GSM. And you can also find us on the TV Time app and leave us feedback there.
Great way to support us is by subscribing to us in whatever podcast client that you use. If you happen to use something like, Apple Podcasts, you can go to goldenspiralmedia.com/apple, and that will give you all of the podcasts in the Global Spiral Media Network. And there are a few new ones coming very soon. I don't know how public it is, but I'll just give you a little taste of things you might be interested in. For example, there might be some people that are listening to our podcast that might be, CBS All Access subscribers. And I've heard a little birdie has told me that there might be a podcast covering a show that's coming up on this network. Or streaming service, I should say. What could this be? You might be waiting for a certain show.
Yep, that's exactly what I was expecting.
Yep. So yes, there is a podcast coming soon. I don't think it's out yet, but it's coming. And I don't even know if I'm supposed to say that, but maybe we'll find out before we release.
Well, anyway, somebody is a huge fan. So. Yep. And they have pretty much guaranteed that they're going to talk about that show.
Yeah.
So I'm sure it's probably not too much of a secret.
Probably not. When you submit feedback, especially if you're doing it through email, we've gotten some really long ones lately. Mm. If you submit and you say, well, you don't mind if we don't read it or something, or just let us know that, because otherwise we might try to read it. So appreciated Brian and Todd letting us know that we didn't have to read it, and believe me, we probably would have. It's just we're already the raw audio right now is about 2 hours 5 minutes, so it'll be less once you hear it, but because there's some things we got to cut out
a little bit.
Bad flubs. Anyway, you can also write a rating or review if you go to Apple Podcasts or Stitcher has ratings. We've gotten one there now, and Podcast Republic. And if there are any other podcast apps that allow that, we'd appreciate it. You can share and retweet us. Now, what I've been doing lately is when I post the episode, I will link to it from our Facebook page. So we have a Golden Spiral Media page. I'll post it there, and then I'll link to it in the Facebook group. That's for our episodes, that is. But certainly our tweets, you can share those and help us, get known a little better. And for that matter, if you have seen us, like I've been posting our episodes on other Facebook groups, join our Facebook group, which Ruthie already gave you the link to. That would be helpful. Other ways you can support us, go to goldenspiralmedia.com/support. And previously mentioned, I am doing the Walking Dead talk through. Now, I said I won't be on next week. I will be, but it'll be in recorded form. So I'm just kind of stepping away from it a little bit, but I'll still be on there. But I've been on the first two episodes for this half season, and the last one for episode 10 will be out shortly after we are finished recording. So next episode, season 2, episode 7, titled Light and Shadows. And what do I think of when it comes to this episode? Of course, we don't know who has written or directed it, but we do know one thing, and that is this. Spock fighting.
Yeah.
Spock fighting, maybe. Maybe he's undergoing Ponfar right now. Anyway, so Light and Shadows is the next episode, and it looks like we will finally see Bearded Spock.
Bearded Spock!
Yes. So with that, I'm Brian.
And I'm Ruthie.
Peace and long life.
Live long and prosper.